Peace and welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. We got a couple of folks that want to chime in. I want to get my man James in because he did want to speak about the school situation. I'm like Lauren. I'm like everybody, man. We might start a revolution up in this piece. But don't be afraid, folks. Not that type of revolution. A revolution of mind, body, and spirit. But James, talk to me. What are your thoughts?
Faraji.
Yes, sir.
James Williams. How you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. I want to correct Darren Muhammad. James Williams, that's me. I'm the one who got the water cut off, not Tyrone Powers. Don't tell him, brother Darren Muhammad. Don't get it twisted. I ain't giving people credit for the work I do, okay? But in light of that fact...
Hey, James, did he ever tell you when they're going to turn the water back on?
Oh, it ain't gonna never be turned back on. They're gonna put what they're gonna do is they're gonna put filters on the water fountains to filter out the lead and the other contaminants that comes in the water.
Wow!
They got them at North Avenue now. Anybody was down there, if they went to the water fountain, they would have seen. I speak to the board on regular occasions. I've spoken to the board at least 50 times over the 20 years. Okay, now, Faraji. Over 22 years of advocating for children's education, I threat white people down at North Avenue. I threatened to fight them on North Avenue if they took kids' money that we fought for in Annapolis to get smaller class sizes. I threatened a guy named Mark Smolarz back in 1993, okay? That's how I do work. Now, I'm going to convey to everybody, I've learned that everybody ain't built for everything. My wisdom over time has taught me some people ain't going to do the battle for the long haul. They'll do a short and a sprint, not the long marathon race.
Mm.
Now, so we have to understand that the situation with the heat, my father was an engineer for 34 years working in the school system. It takes time to build it up. They failed abysmally because they didn't leave the furnaces on and have the engineers going in over the holiday. To keep the boilers working, they turned them, set them off. And when they introduced that heat quickly and tried to rise the temperature up, that's what caused a lot of them pipes to bust, along with they had water in them that froze up because the temperature was so cold. So that's the major component. So the chief operating officer, Keith Scroggins, failed in his responsibility to understand engineering. That was the first problem, okay? So he should be dealt with because his ignorance caused this problem. He should have had engineers on call over the holidays to monitor that these schools were operating and that the boilers didn't get shut completely down. That's what caused the problem.
Mm.
So the people who are going to fight to get the changes made, along with the money that we deserve. Remember, we had Pete Rollins down in Annapolis years ago. He was the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. They have the money. Now, Pete Rollins looked like us, but he's what we call a potato politician. He's brown on the outside, but he's white on the inside. And he was tight with the money, and we never got adequacy in funding through Thornton. So people have to understand. Now, I'm dealing with the school system right now, looking at school budgets and how the money is allocated at each individual school. And I got a meeting tomorrow with somebody from North Avenue because there's things in these school budgets that we don't even know what the money is going to be used for. And I can't, in all honesty, I can't ask for more money if you misappropriate the money we're giving you now.
Yes, right. That's all it is. That's what it comes down to, James.
Just going to blow more money than we gave them.
Right.
There's got to be accountability and start at the top. That's why I chew Dr. Fannalise out every time I go, because she making a $290 a year. Then she at the top, she get her tail kicked. That's what happens. You got to kick butt at the top, and you got to make them so uncomfortable that they say, we got to change because I'm continually getting beat. Yeah, some people are warriors, Faraji, and everybody ain't a warrior.
I got you.
And every battle you a warrior is in. So some people who parents struggling, we got a lot of struggling parents in Baltimore, but we got to understand, some people got to be in it for the long haul. You got to have some perseverance, Faraji, okay?
So hey, James,
I just want to tell you that. I
appreciate the fact that you are so vigilant. I would love for you to give us a call back and let us know how that situation, that meeting go tomorrow, because we definitely want to know. I want to switch gears a little bit. I do want to switch gears a little bit, because, you know, as we look at this school situation, you know, yesterday we had a conversation about this H&M, and I got to at least update you. I got to give you the full context of how this H&M controversy with this young brother who is a model, and now, you know, he wore this hoodie that said "coolest monkey in the jungle." A lot of people got upset about it. But here's the question I always had. The question that I have is like, okay, we are rightfully upset. But what if the parents had something to say or did not choose to say something about this ad? Remember, that was the question I asked. Some of you were like, no, the parents, crazy. Blah. We going, nah, this is just wrong. Wrong, oh, wrong. They need to apologize. H&M has completely apologized. Well, how about this? The mother of the model, of the little boy, her name, Miss Terry Mango, she is a black woman who is of Kenyan descent and resides in Sweden where H&M is based. She replied via Facebook about this chatter that was, there's so much controversy around this ad. She said on Facebook, she felt that the response to her son modeling the hoodie was over the top and had a slight message for the critics. You want to hear this message? Quote, stop crying wolf all the time. Unnecessary issue here. Get over it. When pressed if she was understood the reasons why people got upset, she said she doubled down on it. And she said, you know what? I do understand. But she was still largely unmoved. She said this, that she best believed that she knows that her son was making a fashion statement. And at the end of the day, she sees nothing wrong with the campaign and that, you know what, people need to get over it. The other thing was that she already knew what the boy was wearing and the fact was he modeled many other outfits. Wow. She said on her Instagram page, if I bought that jumper and put it on him and posted it on my pages, would that make me racist? I get people's opinion, but they are not mine. At the end of the day, it's her son. We have Prosperity on the line now. Prosperity, mom came out. What are your thoughts about this? You still think it's an issue, or should we just get over it since his mother is past it?
Oh, my goodness. Blessings. I'm just like, you know what? I mean, this is just compounded on compoundedness of just a whole. And when I say whole, I mean, like, you're actually seeing everything from the top to the bottom to where it began. And it's literally like an attack on the children. Now, I won't really say too much. I'm going to briefly jump in about his mom. We have to understand that she's being paid. Money has always brought silence. You know what I mean? So
right.
We can't expect her to go against H&M because she clearly knew what he was wearing when the campaign was launched. So, I mean, are we shocked by her response? No. That's okay. But I'm going to kind of tie this in a little bit with the school system and kind of say
Come on, Prosperity, because with a name like Prosperity, we don't expect nothing less than greatness.
Stop relying on them to tell us how to think.
Okay.
And that's exactly what's happening right now with the school system. I do have kids in Baltimore City School System that chartered. You know, I do have kids. As a matter of fact, to be honest, and that's why I had to call in when I heard this. My oldest son, who's 15, said to me, oh, my goodness, this is just too much terror about H&M. I love wearing H&M clothes. I hope this does not make you. I'm serious. He said, I hope this does
not make you change your idea about what I'm going to wear. So I'm like listening, and I'm here, I'm relating with him, and my thing is, there's a greater picture. So once again, as the adults, as the parents, as the guides, as the teachers, we have to then step in and show them, because society isn't going to show them. Society is not going to lead them in the right direction. We have to then take that stance.
So do you think that some people have went as far as prosperity to call the mother a sellout? I think that's harsh.
What did I say? I just said, no, let's be real here. Facts are facts. She is going to speak on the side of her money.
Wow.
Her money is what is, like I told you, you know, money buys silence. You know, it's pretty much she knew. I mean, you stated, which is definitely out there. I've heard a couple of things, but when she knew what her son was wearing, she knew the campaign was being launched. So it's not like this is a shock to her. It's not like sometimes they'll actually change the writing on the shirt.
Here's the thing. She's from Kenya. She lives in Sweden. And in that part of the world, right, you know, I've heard and I've talked to people. My wife has shared with me when she traveled. Their view of race and culture is a lot different than our view of race and culture. And, I mean, of course it is, right? Naturally.
It is.
But their view of racism is different. And it's like some people say that we are highly sensitive. We hypersensitive when it comes to race.
I believe that this, I mean, you got to think about with kind of like what you've been saying for breakfast. But in the U.S., they've been fed breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, the whole idea of slavery and racism. You know, when other cultures, they have been given opportunities and they kind of look past it, so to speak. And I grew up multicultural. I grew up traveling the world. So I know, when I say firsthand, at 12 years old, I literally was in Sudan, Africa.
Gotcha.
So, you know, so it's like for me, I see, and like I said, that's why the dialogue has to happen. Yes, we are hypersensitive here in the States. But because of that, I also do think that we have to then start teaching. Well, what is right?
There we go.
Because like I said, we'll go off a lot of different things. And you do right. I mean, there's a lot of different things going on there. I see people jumping all the time. But my thing is, why are you jumping? Why are you jumping? So when my son said to me, I hope that does not make you think twice about why you're buying or why you're not going to buy this. I said, well, why does it matter to you? Why do you like this company? You know what I mean? So, and that's it, because we kind of went into a whole bunch of different things. But I think that this dialogue is healthy.
There you go.
It shows a lot. I think it gives us a lot to think about.
It does. It really does. Ace Prosperity, thank you for being our new caller tonight and being a part of the conversation. William, talk to me.
What's going on?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. When you spoke on this yesterday, I had wanted to call in, but my job had me busy. But anyway, long story short, that was the question I wanted to ask. Did the parents know? Because a lot of times, 99.9% of the time, if their child are involved in modeling, they will have will show the parents exactly what their children are going to be modeling.
Absolutely.
So when I heard the story yesterday morning news and you brought it on your topic yesterday, that's what I had wanted to know. Did the parents know? Because most parents sell their children out, and this is what this woman did. But if she's living in Sweden and they don't look at it like we do, now what we in America has to do is show the Swedish, whatever you want to call those people who are running that company where that company was founded, we got to show them that we're not going to tolerate that. Even though he's not American black child or whatever, we're not going to buy stuff like that from out your store. The first time I heard of H&M is when I was down here, a couple of weeks ago downtown. I'm on my way home, so I'm kind of downtown now. And I saw it, and I was like, H&M, because
it's a very popular store. A lot, if you go into H&M in Towson or whatever, you go, whichever store, you'll see a lot of millennials, quote unquote, in there. You'll see a lot of folks. It's a very popular store. They got big sales. They got a lot of fashion, you know, very fashionable items in there. So I think there's also a generation gap that's a part of this whole conversation as well.
Okay. So what I'm going to do now that I know this, because I thought it was like a Home Depot, something like that, right? It sounds like to me, with my ignorance, you know what I mean? But anyway, what I'm going to do is I'm gonna get with my grandkids.
Go ahead. Come on now, will you?
I'm going to get with my son and them, because you're telling me now it's the millennial. So
it's
my grandkids are millennial. I can never say that word.
Right.
Anyway, I'm going to get with them and tell them, to stop. Let's boycott. Let's not make these people rich off it.
Gotcha.
Let mama get hit in her pocket just as well as the store themselves.
Gotcha.
Because once they see the sales are not selling over there, they're not going to bring that type of stuff over here in this country.
Hey, William, I got to let you go. But I appreciate you, man. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you. Rasheed, talk to me from Laurel.
Hey, assalamu alaikum, and thank you for taking my call.
Walaikum salam. Yes, sir. You're welcome.
Hey, real quick for the last caller, H&M dropped their prices by 80% on this new clothing line. So to help them generate some good buzz over the negative attention that they're getting to this. So that wasn't lost on me.
But let
me
hey, Rasheed, can you pick up a size large for me? I like that joint, though.
I know, right? Like, I'm not about to shop from them. I've been chastising people left and right that have been talking, that have been saying that they're about to go and shop. And I'm like, because it is thing, it's thing. Like, you know, I was about to read off this whole little quote from Mama Tills. You know, she was like, oh, I thought that when that before my son got killed, you know, it was that all the racism that was happening was a problem for the Negroes that were in the South. And I'm like, and then she said, now that it happened to me, I realized how wrong I was. And you know what? The thing is that, you know what? What we're having right now is a problem of solidarity. Like, as soon as this happened, all these black folks stepped up and was like, what in the world is wrong with them? Why would they do that?
Yeah.
And then just as many black folks stepped up and straight up said, I don't care. I'm going to go there and buy clothing because it's 80% off. And I'm like, where is the solidarity at? Like these companies legitimately disrespect you day in and day out. And the only thing you can say is, oh, well, they didn't call me personally and personally tell me to go F myself. So I don't need to have a personal problem with them disrespecting me as a group, as a race, as anything, as a customer.
Hey,
and I'm like, come on, yo, you got to have something in you aside from just that. Somebody needs to call you directly and tell you some disrespect, because if that's the case, then you shouldn't be disrespected by the Charlottesville people that ran over that white woman when everybody was protesting.
Wow, Avery Sheet. I gotta stop you there, but I appreciate that, man. You're right. You gotta have something in you. That's a great way of saying it. Jeff, talk to me.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This is an interesting dynamic, and I think that there is a larger point at stake, and that is simply this: that at some point in time, we have to stop being a culture that allows people to basically shove at us whatever they choose to shove at us. Whether we're talking about schools, whether we're talking about where we shop and what we buy, but this is the first time someone's been disrespectful to our race. And I don't care where you found it. I don't care what your culture is. If you go to Israel right now, you don't see them saying to Palestinians, hey, well, listen, man, give them a chance. And no, they're not going to say that. The bottom line is, at the end of the day, I believe what I believe. And if you don't like it and you want my money, then you're going to believe what I believe. There's certain things that we just should not tolerate. And we have to get to a place where it doesn't, and I like what the caller just a moment ago said, we have to get to a place where it doesn't have to come to our front door before we believe it can be us.
There you go.
That's why we're in the position that we're in right now, because we've been waiting for it to come to our front door. And now we got kids who can't even go to school. We got people who getting beat up in the streets. And we're still trying to figure it out why this is going on. Well, because you were in Owens Mills when it was happening in Sandtown, so you weren't worried about it. But
gotcha.
Now what's happening in Owens Mills.
Hey, I got to let you go, but you're bringing up some great points on this. You are absolutely right. Ayana, thank you for your patience. What are your thoughts?
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
So it's so interesting and ironic and a confirmation. I was just thinking about whether or not I should have this discussion in my African-American studies class with my middle schoolers tomorrow, and I think I surely am, because I think, as one of the other callers made the point, this is a generational issue, and it really just kind of shows how much our young people are not clear about the history of the demoralization of black people in this country, right?
Mm.
And not even this country, but the world. And we have to definitely, as the gentleman just said, stand in solidarity. But a lot of us, we just don't know our history. I just got finished kind of going over with the students some of the deeper, looking deeper into the principles of Kwanzaa and talking to them about Ujamaa, where we spend our dollar, cooperative economics. And it's important for young people to understand, listen, we as black people, we take our money out of our community. which is why we see wealth in Towson. We see wealth in Arundel Mills. We have to teach our kids, listen, when you spend your money in your community, right, your buying power is important. So knowing that the idea of boycott and the idea of keeping your dime and not soliciting certain companies or certain groups that would defame you or demoralize you is important, and it's powerful. And I think also on the other side, like the gentleman said before, we can't get discouraged by some of our own people that are not woke, because when black people boycotted in the South, there were some that still took the bus.
There you go.
That still took the bus.
That's true.
There were some that continued to go with a culture that was out in their face, demoralizing them. But that is institutionalized mindset.
Yeah.
When your mind feels that whiteness, you equate whiteness with superiority, with better. You want to kind of be what they're at. You don't want to go against the grain.
Ayanna, I'm going to stop you right there, and you are absolutely right there, absolutely right. And this is certainly a conversation I would highly encourage that you have with your students. Ms. Serena, you got a couple of seconds, and you got the final word on this.
Good evening, Faraji.
Good evening.
My big issue, just listening to all the callers and then everything that you said, because I heard it actually the other day when you was talking about it before the comment on the mother. The big issue is, It is generational. You know, when you hear something like that from her mouth, it sounds just like money. The problem, just like the lady said before, it's like being a flight attendant on an actual flight. Everybody's not going to be woke when you're going around passing out certain things.
Right.
So we have to understand from her perspective, it's not really much of a perspective from her, but I feel bad for the little boy, because how can you raise a black man and give him, you know, actual concrete values and things that will help him grow into a black man that he will actually need in America, when you're allowing him to, you know, not even see through the eyes of what we already go through and what we've been going through for generations.
Boom. You're going to drop the mic right there, Ms. Serena. I love it. I love it. Look, man, I totally understand. And maybe the mother has a Steve Harvey mentality when it comes to this issue.
10 million. For 4 million, I'll be all the monkey you can stand. Black people will be so embarrassed by my performance, you'll be sitting up there just going, look at this big lip, son of a. You ain't got to act like that much of a monkey. Be picking shit off me, looking at it, be walking around him.
That's Steve Harvey. He said if they win him out a great amount of money, he'd be the baddest monkey ever. Get out of here, Steve Harvey. Miss Mango, you should be ashamed of yourself. I wondered, though, how much did they pay you, though, Miss Mango? How much did they pay your son? Oh, okay. They must give you one of them franchise contracts. Look, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to some very, very game-changing folks. We're going to talk to my sister Erica Alston Buck. That's right, from the Penn North Kids Safe Zone, talking about the work she's doing, of how she's transforming lives over there. Because as much as we talk about the schools and the violence and everything, there are some beautiful, bright spots in Baltimore. And Penn North is one of them. Stay tuned. We'll have that conversation. And, of course, on the next 30, we'll get our producer's pick. So stay riding with me. It's For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community.
I do this for my culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz with more WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for riding with me for the final 30. And I'm so excited because we got some phenomenal people in the studio with us tonight to talk about the important topic of how they're addressing teen trauma in Baltimore City. Now, this is a very, very big topic. Just because as much as we've been talking about what's been going on in the schools and we're talking about what's been the violence that our city is plagued by, not too many times do we actually have conversations about the trauma that's been inflicted on the next generation. And how does that play out? How does that, what does that look like? But most importantly, how do we address it in a way that is realistic, that's relevant for them, and at the same time, a way that will keep them motivated, engaged, and hopeful about their hometown. Joining me for this very, very important conversation, we have two dynamic folks. We have Mr. Rodney Lomax joining me live in studio. And then my sister Erica Alston Buck from Penn North, the Kids Safe Zone. Sister Erica has been doing phenomenal work over in that part of the community well before the Freddie Gray moment, but it was all highlighted during the Freddie Gray unrest. But we're talking to these folks to get a better understanding about what is the next step for our young people and our children. So, Rodney, Erica, thank you so much for being on the program.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, so when we talk about teen trauma, Erica, I want to start with you first. How would you define teen trauma?
It's walking through open air drug markets, you know? It's walking through a community with so many vacant houses. It's jumping over rats the size of cats. It is hearing gunfire and having six-year-olds saying they shooting, and it's normal. The biggest thing that I've found that I think is minimized or not looked at as much, I realize in the work that I do that a big part of trauma for the young people is a loss of identity. You know, no one's dealing with, like, who am I? You know, and am I worthy? What happened to me? Mm. So in the loss of identity, we see children who are living with grandma and living with their aunts, you know, living with cousins, and calling grandma mom and calling my cousins sisters and brothers, like, what does that do to your identity? So it's very important for me in the work that we do. We actually live in a city that needs a safe zone for children.
Yeah,
you know, that's the first thing. Like that's a need. It's very surreal to me to look out into what we've created in the community and see 40 to 100 kids a day that need a safe place. So the way that trauma is dealt with there is, it didn't take me long, and I say this all the time, it didn't take me long to realize that these kids needed more than hugs and high fives.
I saw, yeah.
You know, yeah. You know, that is what I say, because that is my reality. I saw children who, in giving the hugs, like, weren't even capable, you know, because there's no one that's extended that to them. That's kids who, when I ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they say, grow up? I'm trying to get through tomorrow. And that's like an eight-year-old. So it's often that I look out into, like, the yoga studio when our kids are in yoga, and the last 15 minutes of yoga is meditation. And to walk in to see those children laid out and sleeping most of the time, but understanding that that's probably the only 15 minutes of peace in their lives. Mm. So trauma is about the chaos and confusion that they live in every day. Well, for a six-year-old to walk into the building and say, man, man got shot yesterday. And for me to get down on their level and look at them and say, man, man was probably somebody's brother, somebody's uncle, someone's dad, to have them identify with, That's not just a shooting. That's a loss of a person. A family, you know, has experienced a tragic event, and for it to be so normalized. So that's what trauma looks like in the Kids Safe Zone. And in that, I was honored to have to partner with Catholic Charities to hire a therapist, a social worker that looked like them. When we had the opportunity to hire a therapist, I was very intentional about letting Catholic Charities know that the therapist that comes in here needs to understand where we come from, needs to be able to look like and be someone that they could trust.
Mm-hmm.
There's so often that the young people in our kids' safe zone say, I never told anyone this, but, you know, so we're that person. I've never told anyone this, but the last time I heard that was like 3 days ago, and it was a 19-year-old who said, Miss Erica, I've never told anyone this before, but I've never had a home. For 19 years, me and my mom have bounced from shelter to shelter, and I go to school and I pretend that we have a home. It's that. How traumatic is that?
That's very traumatic.
Right? Dang. To never have a home, to never have a stable place to rest. So again, I'm hiring Lomax, Rodney Lomax, as the therapist there was intentional and strategic because we knew that he would fill that gap between high fives and hugs.
So, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Mr. Rodney Lomax, you are a Morgan State University grad.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
So you are home.
Yeah.
But you are a yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Good stuff, y'all.
Because if you were from Coppin, we wouldn't be having this conversation. No, let me stop. Hell to the no. To the
no, 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 no. Hell no. Good stuff, guys.
But you taking what you've learned here. And now you putting it to use in the city. Talk to us a little bit first about your background. What led you to being a therapist?
I want to start off because I would be remiss if I didn't recognize the MSW program at Morgan for its preparation for me to be in the community and working with the individuals that need these services.
That's what I'm talking about.
So I want to do that first. But I always say that my experiences molded me. So I didn't, you know, being a social worker, being a therapist, wasn't one of those things that I woke up and one day and said, this is what I want to be. My experiences kind of shaped me and molded me to be in this place that I am today.
That's what I'm talking about. So it's more of a calling, it sounds like, rather than
a calling. Absolutely. And one of the things that I like to point out is because having experiences myself, one of the things that I always look at is my father was murdered when I was 12 years old.
Mm.
So you're talking about those experiences at a young age. So, you know, just being able to kind of relate, understanding the need to have positive coping skills to be able to get through and move forward from these traumatic experiences.
From your vantage point, Rodney, what are you seeing that Baltimore children are lacking in? Because some people would say it's empathy. Other people would say it would be a stable home. What is the biggest challenge that you see facing Baltimore children?
Positive supports. And that's why Miss Erica and the Kids Safe Zone just kind of plays so huge in this whole piece because they need positive support systems.
And what does that mean and what does that look like?
Well, having a safe place to go, okay. Individuals that they can talk to, they can trust, that they can get positive feedback from. Not, you know, so much say negative peers in the community, that's not going to give them the information that they need to progress. They need to talk to individuals and have dialogue with individuals that are going to give them good information.
Gotcha. So what are some of the big things that you are, what are some of the things that you are working with the children on right now?
Well, one of trust is kind of foremost in the relationship because we need these youth to be able to trust. I'm a therapist, I have the experiences, I have the education, but I come in and they see me, they don't know me.
Right.
I'm like a stranger to them. So building that rapport and that trust is kind of the first barrier that we have to get through. Go ahead.
So no, and this is interesting because Rodney and Erica, when we talk about therapy,
mm-hmm.
that it's not necessarily something that we talk about.
Right.
is always one of those taboo subjects, right? So we recognize that. So I'm interested to learn from you, Erica, this whole idea of bringing the therapist. Did you prime your the children that you work with? Did you prime those little young brothers and sisters and say, hey, look, we're going to have somebody that's going to be coming here, and this is going to be somebody that you can talk to about things? Like, how did you get them prepared? What was your process? What was your strategy behind it?
So it was a series of conversations because they trust me. You know, when kids come and enter the kids' safe zone, the first place that they go is inside my office, get a hug, and then they go to their areas. So it was a series of who's angry? If anyone's been angry, raise your hand. Who's lost a loved one? You know, who has an incarcerated family member?
And how old are these children?
5 to 17. So we divide the kids from 5 to 8, which is our most crucial area, because I've realized that by 10 years old, these kids know which direction they're going to go in. So they're 5 to 8, 9 to 11, and 12 to 17. Rodney works with a demographic that is 14 to 25. So what happened with us is we build a kid safe zone.
That's a special demographic there, Rodney.
It's the guys on the corner. It's the guys on the corner that were called thugs. So a part of the program that Lomax is involved in is the U-Turns program, which has two community outreach workers. And in the job description, we said experience with substance abuse and incarceration preferred. You know, so they, because they're the people that are in the community building, again, that trust system with the guys on the corner, and intentionally navigating them through holistic services that we provide. So in that, they get the therapy. They get support groups. It's a self-support groups where 14 to 25-year-olds are sitting in a circle talking about safety, emotion, loss, and future. So as a result of those conversations, we're like, the next step is Mr. Lomax has some more information that could help you with being angry. And because they trust me, one of the first two clients, kids that Lomax had to deal with, my conversation after he talked with him for 2 hours. So imagine that, a young person speaking to a therapist for 2 hours, and Lomax coming to me and saying he's got a lot of anger issues. So again, like he said, it's about trust. They already trust me, so I can say, oh, your mom died, or you live with your grandmom because your dad is incarcerated. You should probably go talk to Mr. Lomax about that, because he's got some experience in that area. So it's again, it's about trust and guiding them, and in a way that feels comfortable and safe to them.
If you just tune in, I've been talking to Mr. Rodney Lomax, who is an MSU grad and a therapist over at the Penn North Kids Safe Zone. And we're talking to the Miss Erica Alston Buck, who runs the Kids Safe Zone there in Penn North. We want to hear from you, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. If you pose have any questions for Rodney Lomax or for Erica Alston Buck, to get an understanding about their work and how they're penetrating and really changing the game on so many levels as they work with young people, those who have been in very traumatic situations, or preventing those young people from becoming or getting involved in traumatic situations. I would think, Rodney Lomax, that as you talk to these young brothers, man, that there are a lot of barriers that you would have to kind of break through to penetrate.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one is because one of the things that we know that happens is what goes on in this household stays in this household. So you have to break that barrier. It's okay, you can talk to them, because we understand that talking about and dealing with the trauma is one of the main ways that we're going to be able to cope with it and not let it control our lives. But getting them to be able to talk to an individual about some things that they have experienced, been a victim of, community violence, physical and sexual assault, these are the things that these are the traumatic events that we need them to be able to open up about, and so and they can move forward.
And do you find that they want to open up?
It's challenging, and it should be, because these are things that they have operated with negative coping mechanisms for so long. And just to say, you know, here's something new, try this, that's difficult for someone that has been operating with one thought, a negative thought process, for so long. So it's challenging, but it's rewarding when the barriers get broken through.
That's what I like to hear.
What I've seen is the kids that yell, F you, I'm not ever coming back here anymore. The kids that are throwing things, the kids that are running through the building, the ones that are slamming doors, because it's easier to say, F you, Miss Erica, than it is to say, thank you. Thank you. I need you. I appreciate you. And those same kids that say, I'm not coming back anymore, to watch them stand on our steps and look through the window because they want to be there, and for us to always let them back in, even after they say that.
I just love how the fact that they curse at you, but, uh-huh, but with mannerisms. Yeah. Like, F you, Miss Erica. Miss Erica, you could go business, Miss Erica.
I'm
but
never coming back.
I'm never coming back, but thank you for lunch, Miss Erica. Let's go to the phone line, hear what you got to say. Mr. Parker, you got a question, sir. Mr. Parker?
Now, I really don't have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you loud and clear. Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Muhammad, I want to first say thank you for having this wonderful show for the diaspora. I really appreciate it. I'm sure the diaspora appreciates it as well.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, so the first issue and the most prevalent issue that I would like to discuss is the misappropriation of federal funds that is going to these nonprofit mental health organizations that are set up in the name of rehabilitation but actually provide no services to their clients. And that is because their clients are disenfranchised and they're so beaten down in society that they don't know who to turn to because no one is listening or even wants to help. This program is set up in the name of rehabilitation. They have cut out vocational services, cable, internet, transportation to work, and now they are charging their working clients to live there on top of taking all of their monthly Social Security money, and they're not doing anything. It's not like we live in lavish establishments with amenities. These people are living with like $20 a week, just in the fair enough money to buy cigarettes and their toothpaste and cosmetic products. It's ridiculous. And not only that, the staff is very belligerent and they are abusive behind the scenes. It's ridiculous.
Mr. Parker,
Yes, sir.
And I want to give Erica an opportunity to kind of speak to that, because I think what you're bringing up is very, very critical, especially in a city like Baltimore, where you have so many challenges, and we oftentimes are questioning.
This is out here in Harford County.
Oh, so yes, sir.
I can go deep. I can go really deep on
you,
man.
I'm sure you can.
Man, I can tell you, I can something about a manager who's gone to, the manager has gone to one of the client's baby's father's funerals and turned over flowers in disgust and attempted to attack their children, according to this young lady.
All right, Mr. Parker, let me give Erica an opportunity to talk a little bit about this funding and accountability. Erica, if you can speak to that.
I love when people assume that I am operating on federal funds or, you know, money's falling out of the sky for us. I do not in any way, shape, or form accept money from any grants for the sole reason that when you accept a grant, you operate under their agenda. Grants require that you have outcomes that, you know, based on what they think the problem is.
Like,
white folks have swooned into our communities so many times and told us what our problem is, and this is the solution for you. So the difference in what we provided to Kids Safe Zone, we run 100% on donations.
Wow.
100% on donations.
Fantastic.
And have been operating for up to 3 years. We're approaching our third year. And in that, every single relationship of professionals that we bring into the Kids Safe Zone, those kids have to trust that person first. I do not allow adults that in any professional realm to come in and say stuff like, I demand respect. No, these kids deserve respect. So the Kids Safe Zone is truly a youth-led center, meaning that the kids make all of the decisions because no one is listening to them. And this is an opportunity for them to be empowered by making their own decisions and speaking with who they want to speak with. We are not forcing, it is not mandatory to take therapy at the Kids Safe Zone. It is voluntary. It is children who want to help. It is children who understand that that have been told what goes on in this house stays in this house, but because they trust us so much, they're able to tell us what's happening in the house. And yes, as a therapist, Lomax is mandated to report any abuse, so we haven't had that happen or present itself yet.
Yeah.
But in the event that it does, there's no abusive operations in the kids' safe zone.
That's fantastic. Maisha, you talk to us. What are your thoughts? We're talking to Erica Alston Buck and Rodney Lomax.
Hi, good evening. First, I wanted to commend your guests for the work they're doing in the community. I think it's awesome. It's terrific. I just had a question. I know that you said that you were paired with Catholic Charities, and you just kind of gave your bit of information about where your funding comes from. But I was just wondering, like, if there is a component or element of faith in helping to guide the youth that you're dealing with. I know therapy is so important to allow the kids the opportunity to open up, express themselves, and learn different coping skills. But, you know, I think that, you know, I'm a Christian, obviously, and, you know, I think that having an element of faith and being able to see outside of what's in front of you and being able to tap into, you know, a spiritual reality is important too. So was that also an element that's in what you're doing with the children there?
Absolutely. When I talked about the peer-led support groups that the youth from 14 to 29 are in, when they discuss safety, emotion, loss, and future, the two youth community outreach workers help the youth in that setting build their own toolboxes. So when we ask the children what do they have that makes them feel safe, and they say things like prayer, they say things like meditation, they say things like going to church with my grandmother, we encourage that because it is anything that makes you feel safe. So we don't throw any religious jargon down their throats. Each child is open to have a power greater than themselves. So, yes, we encourage a spiritual component.
Rodney, what about you? How does faith play into the work that you're doing, your relationship and interaction with the children?
Well, you know, coping skills, they are a variety of coping skills that we either introduce or reintroduce to the children that we are working with. And we always look at their spirituality, meditation, prayer. But of course, we don't, you know, we have to be careful about the religion. But we always give the youth that we're working with the opportunity to utilize these coping skills to move forward. And spirituality, meditation, and prayer, these are important components of them moving forward from their traumatic experience.
Those are fundamental and universal coping mechanisms.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So I think that I don't think anybody's going to be like, hey, man, I don't like prayer.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? I don't like meditation. Hey, man, you can keep that to yourself. I'm just trying to get quiet, but not through meditation. Miss Gloria, talk to me. We're talking on you got Eric and Alston Buck and Rodney Lomax.
Oh, hi, Erica.
Hi there. How
and
are
hi
you?
Hi, everybody. Happy New Hello. Year.
Hey there,
Happy
Gloria. How are you?
I'm great. But, you know how I feel about this. Uh-oh. As far as I'm concerned, the people that's on top, it is obvious it is not working. People like you, Erica, look what you had to do to try to save some of our Baltimore children. It's at the top. You can't even report abuse of our children. These people are spending the money supposed to be taking care of these children, and you know they're not.
Well, that's not our experience.
It hasn't worked. It hasn't worked. I'm talking about the state. It hasn't worked. What they've been doing, it has not worked.
Absolutely. That's why we are offering something different.
To somebody to help. Look what you just said. You're not even state funded, and the state should be down there trying to save those little children from all they have been through.
I believe, Gloria, is if you give me a moment, why does the state need to support this programming? Why aren't we responsible for taking care of our own people? Why do we think that some big grant is the answer? When I say that we are run on 100% donations, that makes us accountable to the people that donate to us, from $5 to $50,000. So in that, I don't need funding from the state. I don't need funding from the city, because that funding requires me to have outcomes that fit their agenda. And my outcome at the Kids Safe Zone is to keep them alive. And that's not sexy to any foundation.
That's real simple. Mr. Lomax, yes, sir.
Yeah, and I just wanted to include that as a therapist for Catholic Charities, the agency understands that disenfranchised communities has suffered trauma for years, and they have partnered with other agencies and communities to provide the supports to help these individuals, and which is evidenced by Catholic Charities has provided over 9,000 of mental health session hours the last fiscal year. So we're talking about, here's the evidence that you have agencies that are providing the services.
That's what I'm talking. We got a few moments left, family, but I want to give an opportunity, Erica, for you to tell folks how they can become supportive of this work. You get your money through donations. So how can people support you?
So thank you for that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So it's pen-north.org/donate. And as I said, anyone who donates $5 gets the same respect and accountability as someone that donates $50,000. So again, it's very important for me to operate in that way, because, you know, then we're accountable to the $5 donor, and that helps me provide the outcomes that our program seeks to receive. So again, it's pen-north.org/donate.
That's what I'm talking about. Rodney Lomax, Erica Alston Buck, thank you so much for the phenomenal work that you guys are doing. May God continue to bless you, and most importantly, doing the work on the behalf of children that need it most, because God knows we need good support services and support system, like you said, Rodney, for the next generation. So thank you
for having us.
Absolutely. Yes. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us. I want to thank my phenomenal team, Alex Blanc, Mieka Downing, Mikel Ramos on the board, my man Dre Day, and our production assistant, Essence Mosley. Look, if you want to continue the conversation, continue to follow us on social media. Hit me up at Faraji Muhammad on all social media platforms, Faraji Muhammad, Muhammad. And also follow For the Culture on social media as well, all right? Stay tuned, because up next is In the Groove with my man Bassman for that cool jazz to take you through your evening time. But I'm just thankful for the phenomenal conversations that we've been having here. Tomorrow we'll continue those conversations and enjoy the enlightenment that we each are bringing to these conversations. As always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I'm Faraji Muhammad. Look forward to having another great conversation with you tomorrow on tomorrow's edition of For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. The voice of the community. And as always, be good for the culture, Baltimore. Peace.